Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod radio or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the Power Cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Your old pal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I'm Mitch Halleck, and joining me is your friend and mine, Mr. John Cimino. I'm not doing an elaborate intro, so that's it, John. Say hello.
Hello, Mitchie. Yeah, I could tell we had to go through this a few times, so I'll let it slip this time.
And in fact, I shouldn't be the one that's all world-weary, because you, my friend, are just back from a whirlwind weekend over in the Windy City of Chicago, where you happen to be in the good graces of Mr. Roy Thomas.
Yes, yes. We went to a CBCS event. It was a side event from, it was a little further down the street from where C2E2 was happening. It was a special exclusive signing event where Roy Thomas and myself hung out for 3 days. It was a place called Reggie's, and we had a lot of people that came to see us, and CBCS was grading comics. People were passing in their comics, obviously, to be graded, and we also had a few other guests there that came down. Ryan Stegman, a novel editor that was there. There was a few other artists that came periodically through the weekend. But me and Roy were there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday doing signing, talking to fans, and then Roy did a Q&A on Saturday night for everybody. It was really, really fun, and me and Roy just enjoyed laughs, and we had a good time.
I was going to say, after 40 episodes of The Power Cosmic, and they said it wouldn't last, Matt Herring, here we are. And you know what? It's almost funny that we should do an episode where we almost begin in the beginning, because if you listen to this show, all three of you, Scott Martin, you know it's all about comic books. And you just talked about CBCS, which are a great comic book grading company that will be at this year's Terrificon, who also paid for your ticket to get out there. But this is what I'm going to ask you, John. This is going to be how to collect comic books 101, okay?
Sure.
Because you're an expert at that. While you were gone over the weekend, I traveled to every single comic book shop in the great state of Connecticut, all 24 of them. Except a couple, but that's another story. And I handed out flyers and posters to Terrificon, Connecticut's Terrific Comic Con, and I purchased some comic books along the way. Now, don't hit me, John, because I did buy some. I bought a Spider-Man that I never had, but it said on the bag, back cover is ripped. And sure enough, the back cover had some tears and rips in it, and it wasn't going to ever be pristine ever again. But I bought it because I needed that to fulfill my spot in my collection. So, John, what would you tell someone who's just getting into comic books today, Monday, April 24th? What should they buy if they wanted to be, say they're a 30-year-old guy, he wants to buy some comics maybe for his kid that just was born. What would you recommend he do, John?
Well, first off, Mitch, I would tell them to buy what they love. Don't buy to get anything of value, because there's two type of people that get into the field. People that are buying to read and love the hero, or people that are trying to collect and get the high-end stuff to invest in it. So that's the first thing. But a person that's just off the street, buy what you love, because I'll tell you, how many kids I've talked to, young kids with their parents, that they look at these comics and they can't believe some of the prices on them. And it kind of can be a little disheartening, because a kid that loves the Flash all of a sudden looks like a Golden Age, Silver Age Flash, and it's friggin' $1,000. And it's kind of like, I'll never get that, especially to a young kid. So I always kind of gear them, like if they're into the Flash, like the television series, and then they're I'll gear them into the more contemporary stuff, like, oh, well, that's kind of based on this stuff. So that's how you kind of, so it's a little more accessible, a little more affordable, because the bottom line is money. But if they're just doing it because they love it, like back when we were young and we were just digging through those pile of comics, that's what I say. Go through those 50-cent dollar boxes and just dig for that stuff and see what you can come up with.
Well, one of the advantages I had, and you were a little younger than me, but growing up, what they would do is they would reprint a lot, especially Marvel, not so much DC, but they would reprint the earlier books from the 60s. So it was almost like you did have that opportunity to collect the older Marvels. I used to get a book every month called Marvel Tales, and those would reprint the early Spider-Man issues done by Stan and Steve Ditko. And then there was World's Greatest Comics that reprinted the Fantastic Four. Marvel Superheroes, I believe, at one point was reprinting the Hulk. There was a lot of reprint books, and that was done for various reasons. Roy Thomas told us that they had to have so many books every month in their quota, and that's why they did a lot of that. But it was also a good thing to have because, like I said, you could not run out and afford, you know, Spider-Man number one, Fantastic Four number one, but you could easily access these reprint books. Now, the reprint books are basically worthless, correct, John?
Yeah, they were. And let me throw a quick thing at you, too. When I was first getting into comics back in the day and I started getting into a comic book store and you started seeing some of those back issues, I liked those, Marvel Collector's Classics or Collector Item Classics or Fantasy Masterpieces.
I have those, yeah.
Marvel Tales. But the reason why is because I was like, wow, there's more heroes, more stories in this than there are. Why would I get the one that just has that one issue in there when you have a whole bunch of issues? Now, obviously, you didn't care back then that it was a reprint. It was just more to get, more story to get out of that issue. And I thought that was so cool, you know?
It's funny you mention that because when I was sorting through my long boxes this last couple of weeks, you've been gone. So I haven't had anybody to, you know, get my fix of comics. So I went back into the basement and I started digging through older.
You're in the top two, right? You're still in the top two.
Yes. But no, I found a bunch of those. I have a stack of those books you just mentioned, Fantasy Masterpieces, Marvel Collector Classics and stuff. Again, great books from the 60s, giant-sized books. They would be 80 pages or more. I mean, they cost me a quarter back then, and you're right, they had four or five different stories in it. But value on those books, John, worthless?
Well, the earlier ones you can get, like the number one can go for about $100.
Really? Even though it's a it's a reprint.
First off, the cover that's a classic cover. But, but it's still one of the more hotter of those back issue of those reprint back issues, the Marvel Tales, the number twos, threes, and fours, you probably can get like $50, $30, depending on condition. If you're a condition of the number one, you could probably get up to $200 if it's in really, really good shape. I've seen some you can go for $500, like the 9.8. Because the thick binding, they're always tough to keep in good shape. That's why those Silver Surfers were always hard, because the bindings were made very cheap.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Let me say something really quick, Mitch. The reason why I also love those books is because they were thicker, and there's something about the way they look. They look just so cool. You know, you still had the Kirby art. You still had, like, you know, some of the covers of those past issues. So they made it look awesome. Like, it didn't look like you were getting a cheap reprint. It looked good.
Well, the other thing I want to ask you, I also was going through the painstaking process of bagging and boarding my books, which a lot of these books had not been bagged and boarded over the years. I mean, here's my quick cheap solution back in the 80s and 90s.
Well, I should tell that. Yes, Mitch was the type of guy that just stacked his comics in the side of the room.
I used to stack them, and then I used to go, oh, they're curving on one side because the staple edge would curve. So what I would do is I would take books and I'd put them back to back and slide them into one plastic bag because that was so cheap. But so you'd pick up issue one, you'd flip over, issue two would be there, issue three, issue four. So it made sense to me, and it cut down and it saved space. But here's the problem with some of those thicker books I found this weekend. I had the Silver Age bag, I had the backing board, but I could not get those books to lie flat in there. They would curve out. What size bag should I be getting for some of those giant-size Silver Age books?
Well, the giant-size Silver Age, they can fit in the Silver Age comic bags. They can fill the...
No, I had trouble. I bought specifically Silver Age boards and Silver Age bags, and I was trying to put in not brand Eck, some of the later issues.
You want to know the truth, Mitch? They've gotten a little cheaper because they've made them still a smidgen smaller than they were from a few years ago.
Really?
Yes, that's the absolute truth, because you can tell, because I have bags and backboards from old collections, and I don't really buy a lot of the new stuff, the current bags or anything, because those things are small as hell. But when I buy collections, obviously, if they're good enough, you keep those bags and backboards, because I'm going to be going through them like crazy. And I have so much in my supplies in my basement. I mean, we're talking thousands upon thousands and thousands of bags and backboards. But I noticed that the newer contemporary Silver Age bags are smaller than the bags, the Silver Age bags from like at least 10 years ago or maybe even 5 years ago. It's talked about cheap, man. They just... So if they're not fitting in, I'm sure you bought some new Silver Age bags and backboards, correct?
I did. I bought them brand new, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a little... Remember when they cut, when Marvel in the 90s, they were going through a really hell period before the mid-2000s, and they shortened up their comics? Remember they were a little bit smaller?
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
They cut off a smidgen of the top, at least a centimeter. But when you saw them next to each other, you're like, these comics, that was to save money on the presses because they were losing so much money, so they wanted to make it shorter. So those comics are a lot smaller than they were and then they became again. But that's what that's going on there. It's just to save money.
I'll tell you one thing. There's nothing nicer than a nice, tight Silver Age book in a bag and board, you know?
What a lot of collectors and dealers are doing now, they got those Mylights. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, what's a Mylight?
Not like the Mylar ones that where you always see the very expensive one in those glossy plastic?
Yes.
Like, but it's a little bit thick so they don't bend.
Yeah.
They make Mylights where they're actually made... For backboards and stuff that you take the back, but they look so shiny. Look for those, Mylights. It's a little more expensive, but it's almost an illusion, because people that see those in at the conventions or in stores, when the light reflects off them, the book looks so shiny and so crisp. It's like you pressed it and you didn't even press it. Those things are very, very wait, this is a little thing. I know a lot of dealers are going to hate me for saying this because we talk about it all the time. But if you're a buyer, always beware when you get those Mylight books. And you'll notice that a lot of dealers use Mylights now. They don't use the clear bags anymore. They use the Mylights. But I tell people, make sure you take out the book and look at it if you can. Let the dealer take it out so he doesn't get all pissy-wissy. But then look at it then, because those Mylights give the illusion that thing is sparkling. So look into Mylights.
No. It's funny you say that, because I did purchase some older books, and they were in those Mylight bags. Now I know what you were talking about. They were a thicker plastic, and they were very shiny. And you're right. I pulled that book out, and suddenly it's a little duller than it looked a second ago.
Yeah, it's scary. And they flatten it out, too, because the way it's a little bit thicker than the bags, it flattens the book. And so it makes it crisp and clear. And then it has that gloss over it, so it looks like it's pressed. So even if you have a book that has kind of like edging or like, you know, it's got a couple wrinkles in there, it flattens it out, and it's very, with the bright lights, it's a great illusion on the eyes, and people fall for that, if they do.
Well, so here's another thing. Prices vary like crazy, okay? I was under the hypnotic spell of being in the comic book shop, and it's a great shop, I should take you to it. But I'm not going to give the name out over the air, because when I got home, I noticed that I overpaid a little bit. There were some books there, and they, you know, that's the thing. You see them, and they're right in front of you, and you always wanted them, and the prices were all over the place, okay? So I come home, and like I told you, I'm not buying these books to retire with. I'm buying these books mostly to have them and, you know, complete a collection or to actually read them. So I come home, I get a book, I open it up, I read it, and I look at what I paid for it, and then I'll just get my phone and go on eBay and see that same book for almost half the price I paid. And I was, you know, you get a little pissed about it because you just got taken. But the grading of a book is so subjective. What do you go by? Do you go by the buyer's guide, the Bible of comic collectors?
Well, yeah, it's a range. Sometimes I look in the guide, very rarely, but I price for a lot of comic book stores around. That's another part of, people don't know this, but a comic book store in the Massachusetts area and stuff, I'm usually go around to these places and they pay me to grade their comic books. Like, I'll price, but then I have to put them in their price range. So I put what it's probably their range, and then you add a couple bucks because, you know, they got to pay overhead and all that. But it is a range. It's a range. It's always like, you know, it's between $50 and $100. 100 being nice, well, however it may be. But I also say this, Mitch. It also depends on the desperation of the dealer. Some dealers are hoarders, and they don't want to sell that thing, so they give it an outrageous price, and they don't care if you want it or not. When you walk away, they're happy. But then there are those people that are a little bit desperate, that they know they have to price it a little high, hopefully you haggle with them, and then you can get it down a couple hundred bucks. That's how it works. So know who you're going up against. If it's usually a dealer that has a lot of high-end stuff, they got money. And more or less, you know, they got some money, so they might be a little harder to get on those prices. But I would also recommend this. If you go into a collection and you're going to do that, you're going to do some big-end buying, do it on Sunday when they're just, because we don't know if they had a good day or not, and they don't want to bring a lot of that stuff back, and they don't want to pack it away and lug it around. So that's a good way to get them. But the problem with that is if you saw that comic on Saturday or Friday and you're going to say, I'm going to wait on Sunday, it could be gone. So use your discretion.
Yeah, I've had that happen to me before. And speaking of,
just really quick, I know what dealers are going through because, you know, we all talk. And then, did you have a good day? So usually a guy will have something, and then, you know, he didn't have a good day. And then it's like, all right, I'll come in there, and I'll be like, or they come to wholesale to me because I know they need some money for the long journey back. And so that's when you kind of have to be kind of a vigilant and attack.
Well, there is two sides to that story because I know on my show, we run it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And a lot of the real serious comic book collectors will come in on Friday night looking to buy some books. So, I mean, if you did wait till Sunday, some of those books, the rare ones, might be gone because they were scooped up on Friday night.
Well, it also depends on the con because, okay, Mitch, not to toot your horn on your terrific con tootie, but a lot of these places, you're paying $50 for parking, $50 or $60 to get in for the day. And right there, you're already down $110. Sometimes you're down $200. And then if they got some kids, all the stuff, and you just go on there. At least a place like your show, they're getting the free parking, and you still keep the prices reasonable for such a big show.
Yeah, Friday night's only $27 to get in. And if you're a veteran, it's only $20. So.
And then Plastic City in Fitchburg, Mass., I mean, that's going to be on the 22nd, July. Of July. I mean, Keith only charges $2 for admission, and then everybody made money because people come in with money. Because it's just so much that it costs nowadays to get through the door.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt you. So if the prices still stay reasonable, where, like I said, hey, terrific, and I got to give it props that you have small show prices, but you're getting a big show experience, and that's not common. And so when people are coming through the door and they're coming into Terrificon, people have got a little bit more money to spend. Case in point, I made a fortune with you last year. The last 2 years, Mitch, I made a fortune off left there with some big people would think I was a gambler, but I never gambled in my life. I gambled on comics and I won. I rolled the sevens at Terrificon last year.
Well, here's one for you, too. What about eBay? Do you trust a lot of eBay dealers? What should you look for if you're going to do that?
No, I don't do eBay for a number of reasons. Especially for if you're going to do high-end comics, unless you know the person that's selling them and stuff. But I always recommend that. I mean, it's just, there's so many ways to get screwed, especially for comics, because you don't know if that one that he's showing is the correct one. And then you don't know if that buyer, like if I'm a seller, that buyer is the correct one, because sometimes they like to just oh, I don't like this, and so they'll put the comic that looks quite like yours in theirs, and they send it back saying it wasn't, and eBay protects the buyer. I mean, there's so many ways to get screwed. I look at it this way. If you're willing to spend $20,000 on a comic or however it may be, and you live in Idaho and they're in Florida, I would recommend you take that plane trip to Florida, pay that couple $100 to do that. Get yourself, I know it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but it's worth your while because you can get this thing in your hand. I would never, how could you buy something that's that much money and you don't have it in your hand and looking at it? And
No. I've never, something like that, no. I mean, I get a little itchy if I spend $50 on a book.
And that's what I tell, that's the benefit of going to a show. It's like, sure, so maybe they'll be like, this price is kind of high, but I tell them, you're getting the guarantee that that's the book. And that's the most important thing. You know, it's like, you don't want to order something and not get the book and then go through all this hassle and all this stuff, and you might not ever get your money back, you know, or you might not get what you want. It's just, when you're talking about apples, like things that, like, you're looking at a little crease that makes such a difference. You know, unless you go into a dealer that's a very reputable dealer that you know, and it's still hard. There's still scams out there, even on the biggest guys, and I know a lot of them.
Well, there you go. I know my friend, your friend, Mr. Steve Barker, Officer Steve Barker, who's a big art collector, he bought a Spider-Man, I think it was a 29 or something. He was all excited about it. And Steve's grown, he's got kids that are grown, and, you know, he's got some extra cash now. So he's looking to fill in his Spider-Man collection because he's a big Spider-Man fan. And he got this book. It was a great deal. And then he gets mad because he found out the book was actually trimmed. So what is this trimming all about, John?
Yeah, it's just to, like, get, like, the chips. Like, sometimes it has Marvel chipping on the side of the comic, or it could be a little bent, or, you know, sometimes, and it's to even out the book, because the book, you know, sometimes it depends on how it's been stored, but if there's cuts, but the trimming gives it the beautiful edging stuff, and it looks beautiful. But yeah, it takes off a piece of the. I bought an X-Men number one time, and the bottom was trimmed. So obviously, I told the seller that, like, yeah, it's been a little trimmed at the bottom. Like, there was, like, literally, like, a half a centimeter of the comic cut. Because, and I don't know why it was like that. Maybe somebody did that or what, but it was trimmed. You have to, if you're spending that money, I'm telling people, you have to educate yourself. And speaking of counterfeit stuff, like trimming and all that, I was talking, it's funny, going to the airport, it was kind of a trip to the airport, me and Roy were talking, and we were talking about counterfeit stuff, and he actually told me, you know, there's a lot of counterfeit art out there, and he even remembers years ago that, you know, the people weren't as savvy as they were today, and the guy that was selling, it wasn't an important piece, but he said it was the cocaine Green Lantern stuff, you know, the first, wasn't from issue number one, but it was from a few issues up there, but it even wasn't a significant piece, so that was kind of smart to begin with, because if it was more of a significant piece, you'd be a little more cautious, but he said that the guy traced the entire book, he said he traced, like, the entire page, and he did it really good, and then he put it on another, you know, blank paper, and then he traced it, and then he inked the lines, and so he basically mimicked the page. But Roy knew it was a counterfeit because he could tell how the line, well, it just didn't look the same, you know, from that. And obviously he was experienced working with Gil for many years, but he could tell that the page wasn't right because the lines weren't as thick as Gil used to do it. So that's even out there. And I'm sure, like I said, people are more aware of that stuff today, but it just shows you there's even counterfeit original art out there that you have to be very wary of what you buy, Mitch.
All right, well, here's something, too. I, in my rummaging in the basement, I happen to come across two copies of Batman Adventures, issue 8, I think it was 1993-94, both of them still in the plastic that I bought them back in the 90s for $1.25, because Batman Adventures, if we can just go back a little bit, was based on the animated series and wasn't looked upon by serious comic book collectors as a real comic book because, one, it was based on a cartoon, and two, it was intended for kids. But that book is significant because it has the first appearance of Harley Quinn, the Joker's girlfriend, in it. So I have two
Two things, Mitch. It's surprising that you were collecting that at the time because you're more of a Marvel guy. You must have been really into the cartoon.
I love the artwork, and the style of the book mimicked the TV artwork by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm. So that's why I was buying it. And plus, it was only a 30-issue run, 33 issues, so it wasn't a lot of books. And they were only a dollar each because, like I said, they were thrown into the 50-cent bins and such. So it was easy to complete the collection. But so I have those two books. Would you recommend that I go out and get them CBCS or CGC'd?
Are you talking about the number 8 or the number 12?
The first appearance. What did I say, 8?
Yeah, you said it's still bag number 8.
No, I meant number 12, the first appearance. So she's on the cover with Batgirl and Poison Ivy.
Well, two things. I mean, I know you can do it for nostalgic reasons and stuff, and you are so proud of those two number 12s, it makes me sick, Mitch. I mean, enough. Okay, everybody's found a ton of those, all right? But you were so proud. But would I say, I would say you could, since they're bagged, right? You said that they're still bagged.
Yeah, they never opened, yep.
Yeah, that's going to give a little bit more value on it. Even if it's, I would say you could do that. I mean, you could still get the, I think you could still get the price for what it's worth, and even a little more so because of the bagging, even without getting it graded. But you were so proud of those two issues. I say, do it. Why not? Have fun. Do
Is that a book that's going to go up in value in years from now, or is she just flashing the
page? It's going to be strong because Harley Quinn isn't going anywhere. It did plateau a little bit, and, you know, it got a little bit crazy out there. But there's still that new generation of kids. It's an $800 comic, you know, I mean, and that's even high. That's even a little high. But I do believe that one and Deadpool are not really going to go away. Deadpool kind of went down. You got to remember there's so many more Deadpools out there. But the new generation of kids want it, and there's a lot of new kids and girls coming in to the field that like those characters. I don't think they're going to be going anywhere soon. Yes, the prices have dipped a little bit because there's so many of each of them out there. But you have a little novelty there that still has the bagging thing, so that makes it a little more desirable. I think the value of those. I mean, I haven't seen them. I just seen your pictures, but I think those are an $800 comic.
Now here's one for you too. A lot of books that we thought were going to be big, it's just supply and demand, I guess, because I found The Death of Superman, The Death of Robin, back in the 80s and such. What are we talking? Not worth much more than the cover price, huh?
Yeah, but hold on. For some reason, those are still in demand. People like those, but those sell better as the set. Always sell those as a set. Like, you get the all four issues.
Yep.
That's where you can get rid of the other stuff and put more money. Like, case in point, I had issues 1 through 12 of Alias. Now, the Alias issue, the Jessica Jones, that's like a $150 comic, but it doesn't really sell for that. You know, it's hard to get that. So what I did is I took the issue number 1 and I put 1 through 12 and I sold the whole thing for $200. Now, people might say, like, wow, that's really cheap for all those. Yeah, it is because I didn't pay that much for the collection. But it gives me that $150 for that first issue.
Yeah.
But no one's really collecting number 4, number 5.
No. And then...
It helps me get rid of the whole stack and I get $50 more. So selling that 1 through 12 for $200
There's not a lot of books that pop up in the 80s that are worth a lot of money because I'll have my Dark Knight number 1. I have my Watchmen number 1. But though, again, I think there was a lot of...
to sell as a set. You put the Dark Knight 1 through 4, and then you get a nice... Then you can ask a little more, you know? And then same thing with the Watchmen. You put the 1 through 12 as a set, you can get a good price for that.
What about books like Suicide Squad 1? That was a flash in the pan, or...
The early 2000s?
No, the very first Suicide Squad 1.
Yeah, those are good too. Even the ones from the you're talking about.
It came off the Legends series from DC.
Yeah. But since there's so many of those out there, once again, I would sell that as a set. Those are easier to sell because you can get a little more, get a little bit more pricey, but they're getting all the issues.
Okay, all right. Now, Marvel just announced the Cloak and Dagger TV series. What's the deal with first appearances and such? Is it?
Yeah, that went up. That's $100, $150, $200 book, just like Legion. But see, what I do with Legion from the New Mutants is that was a story arc.
It was, 25, 26, and 27 in New Mutants.
Yeah, in 28, I think.
Yeah.
And what I knew, because he appears a little bit in 27, yep. 25, however it is. But I put all the four issues together, and I put that for like $150.
Right.
So like you're getting the whole story, you're getting his first appearance, his minuscule appearance, his first full appearance, and all the whole story. And I would do, but Cloak and Dagger is a little different because what is that, 56?
That was Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, yeah. 56. Yep.
56. That's like like right now because you got the anticipation, the speculatory market, and it's just coming out. That's like a $200 comic. It'll probably put out later. I don't know how well that's going to do. People like it because of you got a white guy, a white girl, and a black guy, so it gets it all nice and everybody gets happy with that stuff. But it'll probably be a solid $150.
All right, and then. I got a lot of number ones from the 70s that, I don't know, whatever happened. The Champions, number one. War is Hell, number one, by our friend Roy Thomas.
The Champions one, that's another funny thing. I like to sell all 12 or 13 issues of that. I like to put it into one big lot because once you sell that number one, there's not many people looking for that number three or that number six, and then you get stuck with that stuff. So you put the number one in there, you sell the whole set, you put a pretty good price for it, and that's how you get rid of everything, but you still make your money, a good chunk of profit. But the Champions number one, I see comic stores sometimes have been a little outrageous with some of that stuff, but that's like a $50 to $70.
All right, well, I got it for $25, so I'm happy. Here's one for you, The Inhumans. Now, I have an Inhumans number one. I also have Amazing Adventures from Marvel, 15-cent book, issue 1 and 2, featuring the Inhumans and Black Widow. And then there's their appearance over in the Fantastic Four. So which Inhumans book should I really be getting? Because that's a show that's about to start in the fall, and the value is going to go up, right?
Yeah, the 45, what is it, the 45 or 35?
45 of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, the first... That one, a few years ago, that thing, because if the movie was supposed to come out and it was rumored, that thing skyrocketed. And then it skyrocketed and then it fell like a freaking, because that movie never came out. It fell and it dropped and nobody cared about it anymore. So then it just kind of was there. It's a person, humans, first black bolt, all that crap. And now that it came back, it doesn't have as high as a demand right now, but it did jump up again. So if you're going to invest in those, I would definitely say, yeah, that whole saga of the Fantastic Four. But see, what hurts the Fantastic that first appearance is the Fantastic Four, because the Fantastic Four is so unhip right now, and it's a sad, sad thing. But a lot of those Fantastic Fours are just not as hot as they were because of the whole Fox thing. Those movies, I mean, they'll come back eventually. Marvel will get that title, hopefully, but Fantastic Four will come back. But right now, it's just not a viable.
Oh, I know. I feel bad because I have a good run of the Fantastic Four, and I was at shops noticing the prices were not that good. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and even, sure, they'll always want the number one, but those, the number two, number three, the first time they get their outfits, it's still not, even the number five, how unhip is Dr. Doom? And it's a travesty. That number five, 20 years ago, was almost impossible to find, that first Dr. Doom, and that almost rivaled number one. But who the hell cares about Dr. Doom today? Nobody! It's funny! And that's such, I'm not saying it's not worth a lot, it's just not selling. It's just not selling. And it took me a few years to sell a high-end FF number five when I yet would never been able to hold that a few years ago. It's just that's the stigma the Fantastic Four has. And you have to remember, a lot of new kids that are coming into the market, they don't care.
I know. I was thinking of that. There is no Fantastic Four. I was thinking that as I was bagging them.
Oh, And case in point, a lot of people that came up to Roy, you know, we were talking. I was looking at their shirts, and it's funny. You see Iron Fist, you see Luke Cage on those shirts, but you see no Wolverine, you see no mutants, you see no Fantastic Four. They like switch them all the way around, and me and Roy were laughing. I was like, Roy, find the FF there, like, and Roy was laughing. He goes, well, at least my characters are on there. And I said, yeah, I know, but where's Wolverine? And it was just funny how, like, even the shirts, all that propaganda, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah, they actually hired, Mike Zach told me this, he did the cover for Secret Wars number one, obviously, but if you see the t-shirt for Secret Wars number one out there, he pointed it out to me, they hired an artist who drew similar to Mike, and they went in and they took out the X-Men characters and inserted different characters like Iron Fist and other people. Yeah, so if you look side by side of Secret Wars 1 and a Secret Wars t-shirt, you'll notice there's no X-Men characters in that shirt.
Yeah, and they're doing that a lot. It's funny, you go to those shirts, you know, it's at Target and Walmart, at those shirts that you see, like, yeah, they're cool because they use a lot of that old art and stuff,
yeah.
But yeah, you'll see none of those characters and stuff. Yeah, so it was pretty funny. I thought that was very clever.
Well, that sounds amazing. And John, on that note, we're going to have to wrap this up, so close it out, John.
And that's that.
Good night, everybody.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.